Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the 8-Bit Adventures Podcast. This is episode 286, streaming on YouTube. So hopefully everything's working. Very, very nervous doing this for the first time. And if you're listening to the audio episode, nothing changes for you. So good on ya. But decided to try YouTube streaming instead of to Twitch, and seeing how that goes. And who knows? We'll see if it like improves workflow and all that stuff. I know a bunch of content creators that I follow have made the jump and like no longer do any Twitch streaming whatsoever. Fingers crossed, I guess. But for folks who do follow the streams, or this show, and you watch it live, YouTube may be the new home for where the live streams go. It's already the home of where the VODs go, really. So it's not like anything changes all that much. It's just an experiment. I'm your host, Sean Hayes, and here to bring you the latest and greatest geeky news of the week. For the 286th week of doing this show. So I got some interesting stuff. It's not a heavy news week. A lot of tabletop news as opposed to video game news. Everybody's just basically talking about Baldur's Gate. That's pretty much dominating the news cycles. Or people trying to predict what Nintendo's next console is going to be still. Some details have theoretically come out, but everybody's still just engaging in conjecture, which I am not going to report on it until we actually get some hard concrete evidence. So I say report. That's a very loose term. Like, I'm not a reporter. I'm an aggregator of news from sites that have journalists. Why don't we get right into it and do our dive into this week's news topics. All right, so first up, Baldur's Gate 3. IGN reports that developer Larian has showed off a few graphs and charts, talking about what the most popular lineage and class choices are in Baldur's Gate 3. Now, if you play Dungeons & Dragons and you use D&D Beyond and have been a user for some time, you know, they used to do this all the time of, like, what as far as characters that are being made on the site. And sort of looking at that data, now that Wizards of the Coast has that data, they're actually utilizing it in the sense of like what might be popular. So here we go. So for Baldur's Gate 3, which is it's an interesting case study of how it differs from tabletop and if there's anything, because like it's not exactly a one-to-one port, right? Larian had to adapt some things from the 5th edition rules to make it work a little bit better for a video game. And I gotta say, in doing so, kind of made some classes and subclasses a lot better. You know, I gotta say. So there we go. So for lineages, half-elf, human, and elf all ranked top choices. Half-elf taking the top spot, but by a very slim margin, which is interesting. In tabletop, human was by far the most prevalent one. So interesting to see that. I think that might be in tabletop, everybody picking variant human to get the bonus feat. And I don't know if they do that in Baldur's Gate. I know they give you like a bunch of weapon proficiencies. For being a human, it's a little, and like I think you get light armor proficiency too, which is really interesting. from a mechanics perspective. But yeah, half elf taking the top spot is not something like they weren't even close in tabletop, I believe. So that's just an interesting twist on it. And then among classes, Paladin, most popular by a huge margin. And then the second most popular being Sorcerer, third most popular being Warlock. So very charisma-based choices right there. Which is funny because, you know, Paladin, very strong in tabletop, very popular choice. Sorcerer is pretty popular, but is considered to be pretty weak in tabletop. And then Warlock, Warlock's all over the place. Some people think it's great and overpowered. Some people think it's, like, terrible and to use. That it's just, like, it's just you just pick Eldritch Blast and you focus everything on Eldritch Blast. You don't care about the other stuff. You know, so very, like, simple class. But, yeah. And then, like, almost all of the other classes are sort of in two groups of, like, you know, Rogue, Bard, I think are, like, in a little grouping by themselves that are pretty popular. And then, like, everything else besides Cleric is in, like, this fairly even block. And then Cleric is just by far the least popular pick. For lineages, it does sort of a neat curve, but Githyanki by far the least popular pick for that one. It's not a big pick in tabletop either. So that's not necessarily surprising. I think there would be some more interesting variations, if there was a little more variety. You know, if they had maybe Asimars and goblins, orcs, you know, lizard folk, tortles, you know, all the really weird stuff that you can find in the Forgotten Realms. You know, might kind of broaden the choice, you know, space the choices out a bit. 93% of players chose to create a custom character instead of using one of the origin characters. This is not shocking at all. It's why would you want to play a pre-built character when you can build your own? Yeah, there's, I think it was like 20% of people spent at least an hour in the character creator, like taking an hour to build their character. You know, for me, character creation spent way more time, trying to decide on like physical features as opposed to class options. That's because I knew I was going to do Beastmaster. And then like, I have a multiplayer game that I'm playing with some folks from the local game store, that I was like, well, I'm going to do a bard, you know, knew that going right in. The character archetypes that I've played before kind of knew what I was going into and how to build. So that was very streamlined. But this, you know, I'm not surprised a human, elf, half elf, are all very popular. Also the halfling and gnome were also sort of at the bottom. That kind of surprises me because they took away, like I have read, I haven't made it like a gnome character myself. I have read that they don't have like the heavy weapon restriction that they do in tabletop. So that's like the only drawback that there is to playing a small character. So I'm kind of surprised because like gnomes and halflings have pretty great abilities. Like gnomes practically get magic resistance, and halflings just have natural one protection. So like those in and of themselves, super awesome. Whereas like with the elves, you know, a lot of their like really interesting features, they don't matter at all. Because like when you take a long rest, like encounters don't necessarily happen. So trance doesn't really come up at all. But yeah, I just think that was interesting. I'm a little shocked that like Dragonborn aren't more popular. And I don't know if that's because they got split out among all the different types of Dragonborn or what. Also a little surprised that Tieflings aren't more popular. Seems like at least in the tabletop community, like tieflings are like everybody wants to have a tiefling bard, it seems like. So I don't know. But data's cool, data's interesting, and since this is still sort of the hot new item and may very well end up being game of the year, just a little bit of interesting stuff going on. Next up, Daggerheart. So for those who are unaware, Daggerheart is Critical Role's upcoming tabletop RPG. Comic Book Gaming reported on its first impressions from Gen Con of it. There was like a demo in which I get to play with Travis Willingham. So that was pretty cool. The game is designed with inspiration from systems like Powered by the Apocalypse, Blades in the Dark, as well as Dungeons and Dragons. Like, it kind of seeks to capture the feel and the tone of it, but being more narrative and more approachable and not as sort of grindy and math oriented. Some notable features of the system include, and this goes out to my buddy Sean, a 2d12 system where you have a hope die and you have a fear die. And the way it works is, you know, you use the 2d12 to get your final result. But whichever die is higher determines whether the result is fear-based or hope-based. And those will give you various, like, if it's fear-based, it'll give you stress and cause, like, negative things to happen. Like, you still do your action, but it prompts, like, negative stuff. Sort of like if you got, like, a mixed success or something in, like Powered by the Apocalypse systems. And if it's hope-based, like, you get hope points, which, like, cause good things to happen. You can power certain abilities with them. But that's like an interesting thought of like what die is higher matters just as much as the two total results. So it's like, you know, you could roll really well, but then unfortunately, like if you could roll a 12 and 11 and get a, you know, a total of 23 out of 24. But if that fear result is just higher, so that's like a 23 fear. So that means, like, oh, yeah, you really might succeed, but also something really bad might happen, you know, or something negative but interesting might happen. In addition, all sorts of cards. So there's, like, a card for your lineage, a card for community, cards, like, your class is made up of, like, cards for two different spheres or disciplines, and all sorts of, like, character abilities. So very card-based, very physical, tactile-based. You know, I kind of like this. I mean, obviously, you could adapt it for a digital virtual tabletop. But I love little fiddly bits. You know, I've seen some arguments against of making it feel too much like a board game. But at the end of the day, like, you are kind of playing a board game. And it has, like, a method for creating your character. It's like two sheets of paper, and, like, you move the top sheet over the bottom sheet in certain ways to, like, answer questions and stuff. So obviously, you know, it's a similar genre to D&D of high fantasy. So it includes combat's going to be part of it. Has a damage threshold system instead of just, like, D&D's sort of, I forget the system, but they called it Ablative of hit points, where, you know, hit points don't really matter until the last hit point, and it just, and, like, there's no threshold for crossing certain values. So this one is, like, you end up, like, rolling dice, and if the damage you take crosses a certain threshold, you have to make a check, or you lose hit point and take, like, detrimental effects. So it's a mix of a couple different systems in there. And then it has a much more cinematic sort of set of mechanics for character death. Makes character death a lot more permanent than in Dungeons and Dragons. But the idea being that if your character is going to die, you have a few options. Is you can send them out in a blaze of glory and automatically get a critical success on whatever action you were attempting to take. Or like you can kind of roll the dice and see if you recover or if you just flat out die. And another one where you can like choose to be like you recover but become permanently scarred and you permanently lose like a hope point from your maximum hope point total. So yeah, very interested to see that. Polygon also had an article talking about it. They were a bit more critical of it than comic book was. And one of the things that they mentioned was if it actually solves D&D's biggest problem, which is sort of a lack of essentially like game master tools that are built into the core rule set. Like D&D has the Dungeon Master's Guide, but the biggest joke about D&D is like nobody reads the Dungeon Master's Guide. So a way to, you know, make that a little bit better has yet to be seen. So next up, Discord.io. So Mashable reports that this is that the third-party service. So this is not Discord, but this was a third-party service that allowed you to like create custom links for channels in your Discord server. Has suffered a large data breach affecting roughly 760,000 users. The service is stopping all operations for the foreseeable future, presumably until it kind of assesses the scope of the leak and like fixes all the how the hacker was able to get this information. They have not seen the information posted. They did release information. A lot of it is just what's publicly available. But there are elements that can be traced back to your email address, which is obviously something that you may not necessarily put out there. And potentially like your payment method, but not necessarily your credit card number. So if you are a person that uses this service, definitely check it out. Make sure that your stuff is secure. And some of the options, they actually went into detail of like how many expected users are actually affected. So obviously it's stuff like your Discord username like affected everybody, but there are certain specific features that only affected like a handful of users. And they have been contacted. It seems like they've been contacted separately. So just because, you know, Discord's big in the gaming sphere. If you ended up using this sort of third-party plugin, definitely check it out. Keep your stuff secure. As always, two-factor authentication on everything, password management, all that good stuff. Just want everybody to be safe with their info. Dungeons & Dragons, Bigby Presents Glory of the Giants is now available. So this is the latest release. I talked about it last week, I believe, with the weird AI art snafu happening with the book. As far as the book itself, which, you know, the AR issue will, like, it was one piece of art. It's going to be corrected by the artist and re-uploaded and everything. You know, as far as content, some really great magic items in there. I haven't gotten a chance to take a look at the giant-specific stuff, but did look at some of the monsters as well as a bunch of the magic items. A lot of really flavorful magic items that I think are really great. And definitely there's some, like, very literary influences in there. So a lot of, like, classic fairy tale influences. And for the monsters, the big ones that I was looking at were the dinosaurs. There's four new dinosaurs in there, all from Ixalan for fans of Magic the Gathering, with the Aerosaur, Altasaur, Regisaur, and Ceratops. And the rationale for this is that they are all sort of like primordial dinosaurs, where they're just giant-sized versions of existing dinosaurs. So, like, Aerosaurs are sort of primordial elemental pterosaurs, and Altasaurs are the same thing but for sauropods. Regisaurs is the same thing but for Tyrannosaurids. Ceratops are just really big ceratopsids. I dig the fact that they're sort of leaning into like an elemental titan kind of aesthetic for the giants in terms of their lore, and then applying that to creatures that sort of would make sense to have sort of a giant theme to them. So it is like with the Altosaurs is that, you know, it's like they're basically like a Pokemon of like 150-foot tall sauropod that has like craggy outcroppings on its back and like elemental streams that look like lava pouring down, and that clouds gather around its head. Like that all sounds very Pokemon-like. Like, you know, very much in the vein of, you know, like a Torkoal or, geez, I'm trying to think of the coal based one that was from, geez, not Scarlet and Violet, but whatever the last one was, Sword and Shield, you know, something like that. So yeah, I thought it was a very cool description. Doesn't really do much in terms of like combat abilities, but leads to more interesting interactions with its environment, just from like an exploration and social aspect, which is good. D&D needs more of that, you know, to kind of like flesh itself and round itself out as a fully fledged game. So, yeah. Book's now available. I have a digital copy right now on D&D Beyond, but hoping, you know, maybe to pick up a physical copy and see how that goes. Overwatch 2, IGN reports that Blizzard has announced that its shooter sequel will graduate from early access to a full live service with the release of Season 6. This is, I included this for the absurdity of it. This is a game that should have, that could have just been a incredibly large balance patch to Overwatch. Like, did not end up needing to be a fully different game. You know, the PvE aspect of it is not really happening. Like, that all got scrapped, and that was the whole reason for doing a separate game. And then the fact that they've said, like, oh, well, it's been an early access. When, in fact, like, you can't say that. Because you automatically moved everybody from Overwatch to Overwatch 2. Like, I don't know. It's, I do not know how the Blizzard PR team let their lead dev, now whoever the lead dev is now for Overwatch 2, to get out there and make that comment. It's also rocking a 9% on Steam, mostly due to folks in China who are able to access the game through Steam but are having to use like international servers, just being completely unhappy with the entirety of the whole package of the game, and especially with what they're getting. So yeah, that was just included for the absurdity factor, because like you can't, there's no way that's early access. Like, it's been released. Like, I don't know. Yeah, and then they tried to justify it with something about, like, well, we don't feel that way in terms of content, but, like, as far as, you know, feature or milestones hit or something, some nonsense. So, yeah. It's, I really don't know what is going on with that Overwatch team. I sure hope they find a way to fix that mess they're in. Next up, Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. Game Informer reports that the Indigo Disc, so this is part two of the DLC for Scarlet and Violet, will include every starter Pokemon from previous games in the series. So this isn't just like the Kanto starters of, oh, once again, it's just going to be Squirtle, Bulbasaur, and Charmander. It's going to be all of them. So all of them up until Scarlet Violet. And furthermore, it's not going to be like, oh, well, we're going to give them out as special events, like as like mystery gifts, or you're going to have to do some sort of special quest or trade with a certain NPC. They're just going to be out in the wild, I guess. You know, maybe they'll be, you know, like maybe they'll be a bit rarer as a spawn. But they'll show up in wild encounters. So good on them. That's what they ended up doing for Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee. I thought it was great. So, and yeah, starters are typically kind of difficult to get your hands on. Particularly from like a, you know, there's like a block that it used to be from like Gen 3 to Gen 5, where like it was kind of difficult to get those starters in later generations, just due to the difficulty of like jumping through hoops to carry stuff over. So yeah, you know, well, here's the other thing. If they're gonna do this, you know, I don't know if for Scarlet Violet they actually put in a national Pokedex or not. Like, I haven't played the games. I kind of got burned on Sword and Shield, and then, you know, I enjoyed Arceus, but, you know, it wasn't the quality of a lot of the game. You know, for me, it felt like a tech demo that they charged $60 for, which, like, you can get away with if you're Monolith, but not if you're Game Freak. But yeah, if they're just going to cram more and more and more Pokemon in there, yeah, I don't know. Maybe just go the whole gamut and just throw them all in. Or if you're going to, you know, from the get-go, stick to this is what we have. We're not expanding it anymore. You know, good on you for doing that. But it seems like with Sword and Shield, that was the reasoning they gave, and then they bamboozled everybody with the DLC and added, like, a whole bunch more Pokemon, so. But at least, hey, you can get starters, and not have to jump through all sorts of hoops for special events and everything to get them. And our last bit of news. Super Mario Brothers. Not the Super Mario Brothers movie, but the movie Super Mario Brothers. The one I don't like to talk about. GameSpot reports that the terrible 1993 film by Disney is returning to theaters in Japan in 4K for its 30th anniversary. So just throwing that out there, 30 years since that atrocious piece of cinema was released to the general public. So if you're in Japan, go celebrate, go see it. Go see it in 4K, which feels a little bit like overkill. There's a lot of just like gross special effects in that movie. Like not horrifying, but just like gross. So like I'm not sure I'd want to see it in 4K. but yeah. So just a little tidbit of information in there. All right, that is going to wrap up this week's episode. Thank you all for joining me. As always, if you would like to look up more of my content, you can check out 8bitadventures.com. If you would like to help support that content, the best way to do that is to become a patron over at patreon.com/8bitadventures. And also, if you want to, you know, catch this podcast live on YouTube, make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/@8bitadventures. And the opening theme is One Up by Professor Shy Guy. You can find his work over at professorshyguy.bandcamp.com. So I'm going to work on, you know, for any live listeners, you know, I'm going to work on seeing if there's stuff that can be done in chat, you know, sort of like Nightbot type stuff, like we had on Twitch, and just look like for what emote options I have. Thank you to all of the patrons.